like to call the Customer Services and Operations Committee to order.
I'm John Passing from the, I work for the school, so I'm supposed to take a picture of me and ready? Just let me know when you're ready.
Committee members Benjamin and myself are here today. Are there any changes to the agenda that you want to make, Mr. Benjamin, or? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Huh? Yeah, I guess. Second item is the approval of minutes of November 4th, 2010. Prior to a motion, is there any amendments you want to offer, Mr. Benjamin?
I don't want to change any word in there at all.
So you move?
I move and
second. And I second the approval of the minutes for right. November 4th. We have two action items today and two information items, and let's proceed with action item 3A.
Good morning, Mr. John Thomas. He'll be doing the presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Both of us.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pleasure to be here today to talk to you about the action to name the bus garage that we're currently starting to build at DC Village. So the purpose is to establish a name for that facility. A little background. We tore down the old Southeast bus garage to make way for the improvements at the stadium and around it. We sold that garage, and as part of that activity, we also purchased property from the district at DC Village to build a new garage.
Why don't we just get to the recommendation, please?
Okay. All right. We recommend that the garage at DC Village be named the Southwestern Bus Facility.
And that's because it's located in Southwest, right?
Located in Southwest, DC.
As opposed to Southeast.
As opposed to Southeast.
All right.
I so move, Mr. Chair. I do have one question, if I may.
Proceed.
Are you going to second it?
Second it.
Okay. I don't remember us going through a formal process of naming before. Have we done? I know we did way back on rail stations. I don't remember it on bus garages like when Montgomery and...
We actually haven't opened a bus garage since 1989, so it's right. been a while since. But
so well, we're establishing that this is one of the important policy issues for the board is naming...
Well, garages. You were here in 89. You remember that?
I was here in 89, but I was not a board member in 89. I don't remember how we named it.
Yeah.
How do we name Landover and Montgomery and...
I don't know if we actually came to the board, but we know that we do that with the rail stations, so we're doing it
okay.
here for the bus
yes,
garage.
We did do it with rail stations, and we continue to as we add little dashes and make the names longer. So moved.
Yeah.
Mr.
Yes, Chair.
No, I've already seconded. Is there any other discussion or
yes,
questions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wells.
Thank you very much. I'm just coming to this, of course. Just for context, my understanding is that the purpose of naming the facility is to be descriptive, so that people will understand where the facility is. And for those familiar with Washington, Southwest really denotes a neighborhood that this bus station is not in. We, you know, call Southwest Washington, which is down by, of course, the channel. And it's a different part of D.C. And it's even noted this section is called the selection of the name for the D.C. Village Bus Facility. I mean, that is the description. Mr. Chair, I don't know how you want to proceed, but I don't believe that this name really works to define an identification of where the bus facility is. But I, of course, my first meeting, I'll defer to the chair on what the intent is of the name.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. My only comment is I don't know whether it would create even more confusion if we called it something else rather than a Southwestern garage. We'd probably be criticized for not being in the right part of the city or something by some outfit out there. But that being said, we do have a motion on the table to approve the Southwestern Garage title. We clearly, with the passage of this motion, will go to the full board, where you certainly can address that concern again.
I have another question.
Sure, go ahead.
How did you choose Southwest rather than just the name that you have here, the DC Village Bus Facility?
Historically, the garages have been named, you know, we have Northern Bus Garage, Western Bus Garage, so they've been, there's been certainly in the district a tendency to name them for the area where they're at, Southeast Bus Garage.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to you, but this will, I think, create some confusion in the district and in general. So we could either table and deal with this next month, or we have to deal with this in the full board.
Yeah, I'd like to proceed to the full board, and certainly you can certainly make that known again, Mr. Wells.
Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Mr. Chair, before I vote, I wanted to note that between now and going to the board, we certainly can have some discussions with Mr. Wells about whether we want to make adjustments to that.
All right.
This at least gets it going to the board.
Correct.
All right. With that, the
all those in favor, say aye.
I vote aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Motion carries.
Note my abstention.
Yes, I do.
Actually, it's in this case not a legal vote because you're not a member of the committee. So it
thank you very much. I appreciate that.
We will fix that. We hope.
Thank you.
I guess Mr. Benjamin hasn't, as current chair, reassigned some of the new members to committees as yet.
We cannot do that until we have a full board meeting, since that must be an action of the board.
Noted. Second item is the WMATA payphone program. Ms. Peck.
Thank you very much. This morning I'm going to ask for board approval to initiate and award a contract to provide a payphone with TTY capabilities at each of Metro's 108 station entrances. And let me give you a short background as to why. Currently there is an existing, coming to the end of its life, 10-year revenue-generating contract with Verizon. It ends in March of 2011. It provides about $1 million a year in revenue as a result of a combination of commission and guaranteed payments. But as you can see from the chart, from 2007 to 2009, Verizon revenue was down by about half. In 2009, Verizon incurred $400,000 in guaranteed payments. And for the latest 12 months, Verizon has generated $400,000 of revenue and paid us $540,000 of revenue. Make your own, draw your own conclusions. We issued an RFP in September of last year to renew that contract, and there were no revenue offers received, including Verizon, who is exiting the payphone business. We did receive an unsolicited proposal after the RFP closed, which offered services for those phones at the cost to Metro of $85 a month. We've also done some market research among the dozen largest transit properties in the United States and find that one by one, as their contracts exhaust, each of those agencies is abandoning payphones. There's no legal requirement to maintain the payphones, although if you have one payphone, you must have one TTY payphone as well. And so to be fiscally responsive and yet sensitive to our special needs riderships, we have laid up four options, and then we have taken them forward to the committee, the committees that you would expect us to take them forward to for their input. Let me describe the four options. The first option is that we maintain all of the 1,074 payphones that we have, but there would be a $2 million swing. The cost to us of maintaining those phones now would be $1 million, and so the cost swing would be from $1 million of revenue, which we are getting now, to $1 million worth of cost. A company called Pacific Telemanagement has offered for $85 a phone a month to maintain those phones. Option two is to maintain only the profitable and the TTY phones. That would have us maintaining currently 214 phones and then spiraling downwards as they became less, as those phones became less and less profitable. We would have only the cost remaining. The locations are not optimal for those phones. They aren't clustered, and the average number of calls is about 30 per month on those phones. That would have us with an annual cost of $110K with the offset of whatever the small revenue was. The third would be to maintain only the TTY phones at the station entrance. This would be a cost of $110,000 annually. The budget, the 2012 budget, presumes we have neither a revenue nor a cost, so that would be an additional cost to the 2012 budget, or we could abandon payphones altogether. We have gone to our key stakeholders, the ACC, next please, the ACC, the JCC, and the RAC. The ACC advised option three would be their selection. The RAC advised option three would be their selection, and the JCC advised that they don't make global recommendations, but they each advise their own members, so you should have been advised by the JCC. Our recommendation is option three. It's a fiscally responsible option at a cost-effective price. It's also responsive to our ridership committee inputs, and it also provides a smooth transition to the special needs hearing impaired riders for emergency communications. We would maintain those TTY phones until we had completed the neutral host project, which would give us ubiquitous cell phone service in all the stations.
Okay, question for you: is it ACC or is it AAC?
AAC.
All right, okay, so that needs to be corrected on the sheet there.
Yes.
And I know the RAC endorsed option three as well. Is that
yes,
correct?
That's
okay.
Good question?
Yeah.
Mr. Downey?
Within option three, which calls for one phone per station, will that be inside or outside fare control?
That will be inside.
So someone who's arrived at the station wants to make a call would have to pay a fare or
right.
could be
at
admitted the by the station manager if necessary.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the discussion here about TTY being a transitional, I don't know the answer to this, but persons who are hearing impaired, once cell phone service is in place, are TTY provisions available on cell phones? I guess texting is.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the thought is once we fully have cell phone capability, the hearing disabled will have access to their communications through that?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin, you had a comment?
Question. Do we have any data on actual use of TTY, not use of the phones, but use of TTY?
The TTY is used in total. We have an average of 30 calls a month per phone. Some portion of those
30,
are TTY.
30 on all or per phone?
Per phone.
So roughly so one per day per phone.
One per day per phone, and some proportion of that is TTY. We don't have the specifics on TTY.
And your proposal is that as we get to the point that people can use cell phones instead, we would not have these phones.
That's correct.
Now, is that a phase out as various areas have it, or do we wait until the entire system has it and then phase it out?
I think because of the way the neutral host project is going to install, it's installing we've installed 20 underground stations now, with the remaining 30, and they will all come on fairly quickly together. So I would recommend we wait until all the stations have that capability and then do it at one time so that everyone knows, no matter where they are, what the situation is. And it's not that it is not a phase out, but it is a one-time, because it will be basically a one-time at which the station cell service is available.
Chairman.
Mr. Downing.
I'm assuming, I think it's correct, that if we have any phone in the system, we do have to have DTY as a accommodation, but we do not have to have phones in the system.
That is correct.
Okay, any other discussion? Is there a motion to accept the recommendation?
So moved.
Second by the chair. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Still this year. All right, motion carries. All right, we have two information items, the first one being the vital signs scorecard. Mr. Sarles or Mr. Kubicek or Ms. Burnside?
Ms. Burnside will be handling the report.
Good morning. My name is Andrea Burnside. I'm the Chief Performance Officer. And this morning we are presenting to you kind of a two-part vital signs report, which includes some highlights from the month that we're reporting on, which is November, and also a little bit of a longer-range look over the last 4 to 6 months to look at how the actions that we've taken have improved performance, and hence the name of the presentation, Metro's Moving the Measures. So if we turn to the next page, please. Looking at the performance highlights for the November period, again, just looking at the month, Metro bus on-time performance is higher than last month and about the same as a year ago in November 2009. 148 new buses are now in service, and additional new buses are going to be put into service beginning of March of next year. Next March. Metro bus mean distance between failures reflects the new buses and the retirement of the old buses. Direct connection between performance and new equipment. November Metro Rail on-time performance is down slightly for November, and this is largely due to new operators entering service. So we have three new classes of operators that graduated are now driving the trains. Car maintenance continues to work with rail transportation to reduce the impact of door malfunctions. And the actual door malfunctions are significantly down for November, but unfortunately this is offset by a number of speed restrictions, daytime track work, and so on, and the impact of new operators. Car maintenance is also working to address root causes that can be corrected for the door malfunctions. During November, all escalator breaks were inspected due to the increased preventative maintenance, and unscheduled escalator repair work declined. Crime declined notably in October, reaching the lowest level since February. And finally, customer complaints were fewer in November, as were commendations, but ridership was also down from October, resulting in a higher complaint rate and steady commendation rate. Moving to the next slide.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
Sure.
If you know it right now, or can you give me what the definition of on-time performance is for each of the modes, Metrobus, Metrorail, and Metro Access? I know they're different, but I'd be interested in what they are.
Actually, in the package you have, in the actual vital signs report in the back, there's the definition pages. And
what,
if you'd like,
what page is that on?
If you turn to page 57 of your package, 57 of 86. Bus on-time performance is adherence to scheduled service. So for delivered trips, it's the difference between the scheduled time and actual time, arriving at a time point based on a window of 2 minutes, no more than 2 minutes early or 7 minutes late. So it's a range of about 9 minutes all told.
And it's based on a sample?
Yes.
Is it based on a random selection of days, or is it good weather only? Rush hour, not rush hour?
I'd have to get back with you on that. I'm not
okay.
Sure about that. Would you like me to go over the rail on time?
I think I can read this, but if there's additional information, additional detail you have, I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, no, a few months back, we actually came to this committee to talk about, do a special performance spotlight on bus on time performance. The committee asked us to go and take a look at the definition and also the target. So we're coming back to the committee in the spring to present some more information on that in more depth.
It also asked you to give us some idea how other systems are operating as well.
Right.
And a comparative note. Mr. Downey? Mr. Downey? Any other discussion or question? Mr. Benjamin?
I wanted to go back to the escalator numbers on the previous page, if we could. What I think you're telling us is that because of actions that we are taking to do preventive maintenance, the number is down a little bit. But because of the preventive maintenance, the number of unscheduled outages has reduced, and therefore there's higher availability.
Correct. Yeah, I see the direct correlation between doing preventive maintenance and the unscheduled orders that come in.
So what we're seeing is actually improved performance because we're taking them out in order to do the preventive maintenance and other campaigns.
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Downey, did you have your question now?
I'm sorry, I don't think it's actually improved. If you look at the overall number, it's down.
Well, that's what Ms. Burnside was saying, and I was trying to get clarified, was the overall number is down, but the overall number includes our initiated preventive maintenance, but the number of calls for escalator outages
as offset
unscheduled has actually gone down also, yeah. So we're doing better because we're pulling them out to fix them.
And we would expect
we may do better in the future. We're not doing better now.
She said we're doing better already.
I'm sorry, but
all right.
A decline from 92% last year to 87% this year is not doing better.
Except that includes the preventive maintenance where we deliberately take it out.
The customer doesn't care.
I understand
that.
I understand it. What I was trying to do was make the distinction of if we take them out for preventive maintenance, is that working? And the answer is yes, that
longer
is working.
Longer term, we would hope to see better improvement. Right now, I don't think the customers are recognize that difference.
They won't see it, right.
Actually, we're not talking about compared to last year, but the previous month, so it's a shorter window.
Any other questions at this time before she continues? Proceed.
Okay, thank you. The next slide, we wanted to take the opportunity with some of the new board members here and also the board members that have been on the board for a while to talk about the purpose of the vital signs. And sometimes a picture helps tell the story. So we often use this what we call performance pyramid to tell the story. So we have different audiences for different methods of performance reporting. And this kind of shows the range of different types of measurement and way we're managing performance within the organization. So at the top of the pyramid, we have the board and the public, and the type of reports that we would use is the vital signs, as you see here, which we're talking about today. It's more of a strategic focus, less detailed and so on, as you can see on the graphic. The middle is the general manager who has regular meetings with his executives. He has his six-month action plan, which I know he's shared publicly. And as you get towards the bottom of the pyramid, you have more of a tactical focus. You have much more detail in what we call the execution plans that are being developed at the departmental level. We also have different management tools that have been developed. For example, BUS has a dashboard, and that was discussed with the committee a couple months back. MTPD, the police, have a biweekly Metro Stats meeting where they look at all their information and decide how they're going to deploy their resources. Next slide, please. So, again, as I mentioned, what we're doing is in this report is taking a look back at a little bit of a longer range, the last quarter to 6 months, to talk about results and demonstrate how actions we've taken have improved performance. And on purpose, we are focusing on more of the positive areas because we're moving the measures in these areas. So we have some feature stories here. Bus reliability, we've been improving the fleet. Improving the fleet has resulted in significant improvements to the mean distance between failures, as you're aware. This is more important than just buying a new car, but it reflects the maintenance team's understanding of new systems as well as managing preventative maintenance and warranty activity. Next slide. Elevator availability, maintenance teams have been redistributed at the beginning of the fiscal year to focus more directly on preventative maintenance. And since then, preventative maintenance compliance has increased from 52.8% in July to 88% in September. As a result, unscheduled service calls have been cut by about 37%, and availability has improved, exceeding last year's rate for October and November. And we all have questions about escalators, and I wanted to let you know, as I'll talk about in the next step, so we're coming back with an in-depth discussion about escalator performance on February 10th to this committee.
Ms. Hines?
Just a quick question. How is the target line derived in each one of these little charts? Where does that number come from?
The targets that are in the vital signs shown are targets that have been established by the functional areas. So these targets have been in place for some time. We are going through and evaluating all the targets as we are doing for the bus on-time performance targets. So we're making our way through each of these measures to look at whether they're still appropriate. And for example, when we purchase new buses and the reliability goes up, then we have adjusted the target. So it's a target that changes over time depending on the circumstances and conditions.
So when I look at page 29 at the bus fleet reliability one, for instance, this is a readjusted target, or you're in the process of thinking about readjusting this target?
The bus on-time performance, that's the one that we're working with the operations manager, Jack Requa, and his team to look at not only the target but also the definition of on-time performance. You know, is the 2 minutes early, 7 minutes late range correct?
You referred to on-time performance or reliability?
I'm looking at the little chart on page 29, reliability.
Okay. Yes, we have adjusted that over time. So we have adjusted it to be, mean distance between miles would go down. We've adjusted it down, reflecting the purchase of new buses.
Up is good.
Apologize. Up is good.
So this has already been adjusted internally to reflect the fact that we have new buses and that we think it's going to go up. And the question is, right now, looking at that trend line, I'd say this is a pretty low target if that trend line continues.
Yes, we will continue to look at it. As we said, we're even putting new buses into service in March, so we'll look at adjusting it again.
Are they adjusted on some cycle?
No, not at this time. Okay. But that is probably a good idea, that something that we would like to get to.
That's a good question. In fact, we may want to have even another briefing on how those levels are determined, because clearly if you look at that chart, we're understating our goal, in my view. So.
And actually, you know, I would consider that part of the increased focus on performance at Metro. So this is a fairly new function. This report, this would be the eighth report we provided. So that is definitely a best practice to look on a regular basis at your targets and resetting them and understanding what they are and getting buy-in. You know, to be quite frank, most of these targets have been in place for some time and have been established in different ways by the departments.
Just to follow up on that, I'm presuming that some of these targets were originally based on industry averages. Is that correct? Or is someone looking at other systems and how they're approaching the same kind of baseline establishment or goal establishment?
I can't really make a general statement like that. I'm not sure specifically. Like I said, these are historic targets that have been in place for some time.
Any other question, comments? Mr. Acosta, did you have one?
Now, that was a question I was going to ask.
Okay.
Because I think even on-time performance at different transit agencies can be measured in different ways, and I think it would be interesting to compare, you know, how we're doing against, say, New York or Chicago or similar transit properties.
Yes.
As we establish these targets. So there are internal goals that we set, but also how we're performing against our peer agencies, I think, would also tell us how well we're doing overall. So I think the discussion about how we set targets might be an interesting one for this committee at some point. As you're kind of working through this new process.
I agree, and we would really appreciate your participation and input on that. As far as benchmarking against other agencies, we definitely will be doing that. The challenge is the way that there's no kind of industry standard, so everybody measures it differently, includes different information in the – so you don't want to make sure you're comparing apples to apples.
Okay. Proceed.
And next slide, again, on focusing on where actions have improved the measures, Metro Access performances on target. It has provided on-time service within 1% of target, consistent with policy. This is due to continually improving, working to improve schedule efficiency and providing good service. The staff make adjustments to the scheduling process to manage timeliness. They also monitor the customer complaints measure, which is a clear indicator of whether customers are being picked up and transported as expected. Moving to the next slide, a very good news story, parking lot crime. As the police have reviewed crime statistics and trends, and I mentioned the Metro Stat meeting that occurs on a biweekly basis, the officers are redeployed to areas where criminal activity has increased, focusing on hotspots. Since the focus on parking lots through increased visibility and customer awareness began, fewer crimes in parking lots have been reported. Okay, and the next one is...
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hines.
Just again, a question about what this is actually telling me. The access going up says 2468. Is that two incidents? Is that two per some number of parked cars? I'm a little puzzled what it is. I mean, I see that we're going in the right direction, but I don't know what this means.
What's the
per
unit?
Million passengers.
Two per million passengers.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, we should put better.
That would be helpful.
We'll do that next time.
Ms. Hudgens, you had a question?
I'm going to wait. I think
it's regarding what you're reporting today on a parking lot crime. But I know we are measuring other crime indexes. Is that correct? And I guess I would like to raise the question of where you see us with, and I guess it would not be an injury. Arrests and citations. That's probably the one that would be interesting for us, because those are more inside the station. For example, we've understood the parking lot piece very much. It's a sort of magnet place for certain types of crimes. But the other part of the safety issue is how safe people are within our system. And is that in the arrest and citation one? And I want to be very graphic, and that's the video issue that we talked about in the media most recently. And how we use this as an indicator of how we are perceiving safety in terms of our passengers.
On that, if you don't mind, I'd like the chief to come up and talk a little bit about how he runs his Metro Stat meetings and how he uses statistics to deploy his forces.
Thank you very much. As an example, relative to the parking lot crime, we know that the majority of the crime that's committed in the system was directed to the parking lot. So this is a Metro Stat look at what we can do for that specific types of crimes, whether it's putting vehicles out in the street, adding additional lighting. There will be strategies that will be addressing the front plaza types of assaults, things of that nature. But this is just an example.
Let me just add, when the chief, just similar to what you see in New York City with Comstat and that sort of thing, as Andrea mentioned before, the chief meets biweekly, occasionally I join, where he goes through a series of statistics, arrests, number of crimes, locations, all that sort of thing, and he has his commanders all there, and then they come up with the strategies to address the latest latest trends, and then how they change their deployment strategies to address them. So that's an ongoing thing that he does.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wells.
Thank you. Could you explain how the emergency number or the reporting an incident works? I believe there's a 10-digit number. And then does it work like a 911 on the Metro? Or do our customers, should they call 911 instead? And is this tracked, either number of the number of calls?
Yes, the customers could utilize any of the numbers for the internal number, the 202-962-2121. That will directly contact them to our police communications. Should they also use the 911, we would go through the Metropolitan Police. They, in turn, would immediately contact the Metro Transit Police Communication Dispatch, and we would direct a person to that location.
So the first number works like an internal Metro 911.
Right.
And so that's an emergency number.
Absolutely.
And then we track the number of calls?
Yes, we track the number of calls, the types of calls, how we have a computer-aided dispatch system. So at the end of the day, we know where the call came from, what the call, how many units were dispatched, the response time, all of that information is tracked.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Please.
Ms. Porter?
Could you just explain what parking lot crime includes? For example, is this assaults on people? Is this car vandalism? Is this stolen cars, broken windows?
The parking lot crime traditionally is a destruction of property, whether a person just breaks a window, scratches a car, or the actual destruction and taking of GPS, catalytic converters, monies, videotapes, anything of that nature. So, and we work consistently with the area jurisdictional police departments, whether it's in Prince George's County, Montgomery County, and so collaboratively we identify people who either have had those types of crimes before, they're in their database, in our database, and working together, we can close out many crimes. Many crimes are closed from the area jurisdiction. They reach out to our detectives, and we subsequently close additional crimes.
That's very commendable, but let me just make sure, these are then property crimes. These are not assaults against individuals.
The crimes against property, we categorize them as such. Crimes against persons, whether it's a robbery, simple assault, things of that nature, if it happens to occur in the parking lots, then it's categorized by two ways. Crimes in the parking lot, but crimes against a person in the parking lot, whether they're walking back to their vehicle and they're assaulted.
But is that included in this number?
Yes, it is.
Okay, but it sounds like from what you're saying that that's not the majority of them.
That is not the majority at all.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, proceed.
Okay, the next slide is a focus on employee injuries, and as Metro has increased its focus on employee injuries and made safety a very visible priority, we've seen results. The FY11 monthly workers' comp claims have been lower than the corresponding month last fiscal year. Some of the actions that we've taken, you can see listed here, monitoring the quality and quantity of safety conversations. So each manager is expected to spend some time speaking with employees about safety, and that's actually monitored and measured, how much time they spend. Conducting local safety committees. There's local safety committees at each work site that meet on a regular basis. Working with employees to identify and prevent future injuries. We have a robust at-risk program, which focuses on employees that have frequent injuries, trying to help them work safer. Developing the roadway protection worker protection program that you're familiar with. You're familiar with the employee survey we did, which had a very significant response rate of 97%. The new safety hotline, as well as making sure that we reward those people who are doing incredible things like driving a million, 2 million, 3 million miles without an accident, bus operators.
Question on that from me, go back to that chart. The shaded part of that chart, to me, adds confusion to the chart. You know, it just, I'm not sure you really need that. And then what's the basis for the reduction from 2007? Well, why was that picked a particular year? You know, I don't really... I just think it adds to the confusion of the chart, but go ahead.
Thank you for that input. We are looking at revising the way that we present this information. The 2007 year was significant. That's when we began our partnership with the DuPont program and the focus on all the different safety measures we were taking. So we've been judging ourselves against that 2007 baseline, but we're looking at new ways to yes. present this information.
I think that would a little more add clarity to the briefing on that one. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Okay, finally, in summary, just wanted to reiterate that we, kind of hearkening back to the pyramid, we are wanted to demonstrate that we are using information to take actions and improve our performance, and really building on the pyramid, building on the base by developing at the department level all their execution plans, the different management tools, whether it's dashboards or MTPDs, MetroStat meeting, and we're seeing results. So Metro's becoming a performance-based agency. And next steps, the Office of Performance will continue to work with the departments, as I mentioned, to develop their plans, turning the data into useful performance information, and evaluating the information to identify actions to improve performance. And as an example, we recently developed we call it our tactical report, that lists escalators that are out of service by sector, cause, total time of service, and estimated return to service date. And another management tool creates some competition between the different sectors assigned to improve the escalator system. We will come back on February 10th to this committee with an in-depth escalator performance update. We'll discuss mean distance between failures and other critical performance measures necessary to provide reliable service. Also talk about update on the VTX audit and the status of our actions around that, as you requested. As noted in the recent board mailing, Bus Transportation is revising their on-time performance definition and target. We'll be coming back in the spring with that. And also wanted to just say that different organizations are beginning to seek us out to learn about our successes with performance-based management. We've had the Maryland Transit folks come speak to us, the Utah Transit Authority is coming, so we're being seen, hopefully, as a leader in performance. And I appreciate presenting to you, and let me know if you have any questions.
Okay, I have, thank you for the report. As this gets fine-tuned month after month, I like the way we're headed, so appreciate your efforts. Although not on the overall brief, I'd like to direct your attention to page 46 of 87, or large page 11. The double numbering system still drives me nuts here. But it's rail fleet reliability, November, objective 2.1, improve service reliability. One of the bullets of why the performance change says, rail cars out of service waiting for parts, particularly older vehicles, continue to create challenges for rail car maintenance staff, maintaining sufficient fleet availability for peak periods, which also impacts on-time performance. Can someone talk to me about what kind of parts problem do we have? How many actually vehicles or cars do we have out of service because they're waiting parts?
I'll let Mr. Kubitschek discuss that.
Where we're at this point in time is we're averaging anywhere from 30 to 50 cars down a day for actual parts and materials. So that compounds the availability. Also, the other thing that hurts us on availability is the belling of the 1,000 series cars, because if we do not have the other rail cars to put in front of them, so that double compounds our issue for us to be able to make availability.
So, I mean, primarily the parts are associated with the 1,000 series cars?
No, sir. They would range anywhere from all series throughout.
And what kind of lead time? I mean, I assume we have some sort of stocks in-house for routinely replaced items. Are we seeing excessive delay because of our own parts system?
Absolutely. What we're doing is we are meeting with the procurement and contracts department on a regular basis. It's also not only just with rail, but also with bus, trying to get a better configuration on contracts and materials. We're also starting to focus on long-term guaranteed contracts. Say, for instance, have guaranteed agreements that are in place for like 3 years. Typically what they would do beforehand was they would just buy enough to get from the next 3 months, the next 3 months, or the next 3 months. Well, for example, like brake parts, materials, you have lead time that's sometimes 6 months to a year to 18 months. And so one of the things that we're looking at is going in that direction to have larger contracts, fixed guarantees, guaranteed deliverables to make sure that we don't have these peaks and valleys.
So in summary, you're basically telling me, related to the 1,000 series car, that because we're still using them, our fleet reliability is being impacted.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Downey?
Well, as I interpret your comment about bellying, what you're saying is you may have a workable 1,000 series car that you cannot put in service because you don't have the other cars to surround it with?
That is 100% correct, as well as with this requirement, we have to jockey cars from one side of the system to the other side of the system trying to mate it up because we're not permitted. So that compounds it that much more.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you for that report. Let's move on to the next information item, 2011 scheduled rail disruptions.
Okay. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be able to talk about this. I'll try to be as brief as possible on this. Just as an overview, one of the things that we're trying to do here with this overstructure and our outages is, as you know, on the bus side with underneath Jack Requa, Phil Wallace, they're doing an awesome job with predicting their needs for buses, you know, in several years. As well as here recently, we've addressed the 7K on our rolling stock, towards kind of have a overall program going out for the next 10 years. You know, covers growth, rehabs, everything else. So this infrastructure is the next step, and this also ties into our number one thing is safety, state of good repair, and capital. What we're trying, again, to accomplish here is just to start communicating to everybody with the board, with our public, and also to start increasing our long-range planning on what's taking place. It is just simple a reality of what we have to do to maintain and sustain this system. The other component why it's also very important is because as we start doing heavy-duty work on the rail side, it impacts other departments within the agency, bus, access, especially the transit police because, you know, we're changing operational programs. You got security with that, emergency management, our media relations. So there's a lot of underlying components that impact this. So what we want to do is to start talking about this is what's going to happen for the next year, or this is what's going to happen for the next 2 years. The other side of it is that we're also very sensitive that we don't want to look like we're trying to run people away from the system, but it's just a requirement for us to sustain and maintain this.
Mr. Benjamin had a question.
One of the things that, as I look at this, I immediately reflect on is the discussion we had about some of the overtime costs associated with bus. Now, when we do this, we run some rather robust, especially when we close down completely, we run some very robust bus service during the times that we have rail not working. Does that get charged to bus operating, or does that get charged to capital?
That gets charged to the capital project. That's why we're working on this in advance for the planning of that, to make sure.
Okay, so all of that is there. That's not part of the explanation for the overtime.
That's correct.
You.
And I would also say the other departments are very liberal and tracking us down to make sure that they charge us the correct account.
Proceed.
Okay. Just at the bottom of this, just kind of gives you some schedule time that we're working with. There is a difference between the core of the system and the outer realms of it, so it does get very complicated. The third to bottom bullet, periodic daytime single tracking. 2 or 3 years ago, there used to be single tracking all over the place. We stopped that. We halted that because they were really impacting the overall revenue service. So what we're trying to do is target areas of the railroad that we can operate a off-peak schedule without impacting the customers and stuff. But we are coming back to get more aggressive on state of good repair. Next slide, please. Just to kind of highlight.
A question from Mr. Daniel.
Question with respect to that. With this as our basic working paradigm, are the schedules of those who work on these systems adjusted to the fact that their regular work day is the weekend?
Yes, we have a variety of schedules that, you know, not only for maintenance staff, but we're also sensitive to the union contract for even our train schedules because we do have penalty clauses in that if we're not adhering to schedules. So, and again, this adage with this looking out just helps us plan that much more.
So that we're not paying overtime to have people work on these
There schedules. Is overtime on certain projects.
If they do more than a day's work, but their base schedule at base wages is show up on Saturday to do this work.
That is correct. That's why we're planning this work out so all of a sudden it just doesn't show up and we're running a bunch of overtime. It also impacts our regular maintenance activities as well as capital.
Okay.
Could I just make a comment here? This is very interesting to me as a new board member, the largest capital improvement program since the system was built. That's certainly not the impression you get if you listen to people who ride the system or people or what you hear in the press. And I wonder what efforts we've made to do public education to let people know that this is an inconvenience, but for a purpose, for a larger purpose. And we really are trying to do what the public has been complaining about for a while, which is letting the system deteriorate. So, because I'm not seeing this anywhere out in the public or in the press that, you know, okay, this is something that we've got to put up with because they're making these great improvements.
As was mentioned, we're going from not maintaining the system as well as we should have to trying to get closer to that that goal. And part of this is a much more accelerated capital program as well as maintenance. So as we've been going over the last couple of major outages, we've been doing an awful lot of advanced publicity on what we're doing and why we're doing it. A lot of it tied to the NTSB recommendations and the safety recommendations. In fact, interesting your comment, because just in the last couple of days we've been talking about, okay, you know, customers hear that, and they're going to be hearing that for a long time to come, and they're going to get tired of it. So we have to tie it into, in the end, this is better for the system. It is going to be better for the system, so that you'll see more messages along those lines coming in the future.
Yeah, I want to point out that that's something that Ms. Port is actually correct, certainly correct, and something we've been harping on for some time, of totally communicating the issues associated with outages and track work. But Mr. Benjamin, you had some comments as well.
Yeah, I think I heard what I was looking for at the last part of Mr. Searles' comments, and picking up on Ms. Porter's question. What we did is we moved so far from the stage of not communicating particularly well when we had one of these major outages to doing, I think, a really good job of making sure people know in advance the following outage is going to occur in the following place. What we haven't done is really reflect the discussion that Ms. Porter just had and really what Mr. Downey and I had earlier talking about the escalator outages. We are at a stage where, as you pointed out, Mr. Searles, we are doing a major investment and major rehabilitation, and because of the way particularly our rail system is designed, there's no way to do it without disrupting service. They're in the third track to run on. There isn't an extra escalator there in most cases for people to go on. So when we're working on less than one escalator, they've got to climb stairs on the other one, or they've got to climb the other escalator. What isn't getting communicated, I think, is that broader issue that Ms. Porter pointed out and Mr. Downey noted. What is the public perception? The public perception is there's this issue, there's that issue, there's the other issue. What we haven't done is an overarching program that says there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on here. We have no choice but disrupting your service now in all of these things. And the goal for all of this is that on the far end, you will get better service and more reliable service. That message hasn't, I don't think, has been very clear out there, and that's one I think we do need to work on.
Ms. Hudgens?
I heard something a little bit different, and it's that we, because I think if we say the media, we've been getting the information out, and the source of that information is the larger conversation versus where the customer meets the message, and that the customer meets the message in the service that they're receiving every day. And I think that's the part that's been missing. If you take all of the investments that we've been making and the successes of doing that through those interruptions, but the customer only sees the interruption and they don't see the sign that I see at home that says, thanks to the taxpayers of Fairfax County, you will now, you know, that, and is that the future message that we want to be able to convey, that where the customer meets the inconvenience, they understand that it is a benefit to them, and thank you, probably an investment made by them.
Yeah, I want to point out, just to add on to that conversation, to some degree, as a person who uses the Metro daily and on the weekends, when I see some of the announcements, I appreciate that they give times, you know, delay times. In other words, add another 40 minutes on your trip today. I want you to really carefully look at those estimated times, because to some degree they may be scaring people away to use the Metro Rail system during the weekends particularly. There have been a couple of cases where I said, God, an hour delay. Well, I better not use the Metro today, and I drive instead. So really carefully review those, and certainly based on your actual repair times. And I know that sometimes repair times can't be exact, but certainly try to fine-tune those delay times because, you know, using the Metro on Saturday, and I've been told that I have to expect a 40-minute delay time, and I'm thinking, wow, that's a long time. Should I drive? So just I don't want to reach the point where we overestimate the delay time and that we need to be fine-tuning those numbers. Other discussion, Ms. Hine.
I think there's a couple things. People said very important things. The one I would focus on is where's the end? You know, we've said you're going to experience difficulty here for a while, so helping people understand, is this a three-year, is this a five-year, and that's where you're going to really see it, or is this a, you know, if you use this station in the next 6 months, you're going to be able to see a real change. I think that's a really important question. And the last, I've been sitting here looking at these posters on the wall, and I remember when Metro Matters came in, and I remember the buzz around it, and I remember everybody saying, hey, yeah, it does matter to me. And in some way, I think that's what we're talking about here, too, is what's that new reinvestment thing that people can hold on to and say, hey, you know, we're making this right for the next 20 years, which is kind of how Metro Matters got played when it first came in. So I think that's another piece of the puzzle, too.
Any other discussion or questions? Proceed, please.
What we have here is just a high-level set of, you know, projects from NTSB recommendations, you know, our line segment contracts, the number 8 guarded switches, that's also part of an NTSB recommendation, Dulles, which will be around for the next two or three years as we do this tie-in work and stuff, neutral host, that it relates back to the cell phone coverage that we're working on, you know, establishing throughout the network. We did extract just the elevator and escalator because within this there's work within the line segment contracts as well as standalone capital where we're working these efforts, you know, in parallel. Next slide, please. Okay, we tried to provide in your packet, you know, this in color as well. Just wanted to kind of do just kind of an excerpt here and just kind of do a breakdown of the various levels of work and outages that's taking place just on the red line alone. We have everything from regular scheduled maintenance to NTSB recommendations to basic construction work that's taking place. What we're really trying to communicate here is that the entire system is going to be touched in one form or fashion. And for us to continue to maintain or to stay after a state of good repair, there's really no options, you know, for us as we move forward. I'd like to get to the next slide, please. Okay. This doesn't come out in your presentation, but what we're going to do is we're going to do like kind of like an overlay. The previous items that we discussed are all throughout the system. Just as a clarifier, this is no attempt to name the future Dulles line. We just kind of put it there, okay? it does play an important role. So if we could, we'll start seeing overlays of work and stuff that's tied in with like NTSB recommendations, turnouts, you know, just heavy duty work. And the next one that we'll see right in here ties in with you know, regular work. Some of it is heavy planned maintenance work. Some of it is, for example, like flash butt welding. We get a lot of questions on that. You notice we have a lot of rail breaks and stuff here, have a lot of joints. What we're doing is we're going through an effort and campaign to basically de-stress rail, weld it together, eliminate these joints so you don't hear all the click, 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 click. And it also helps reduce, you know, the breaks that we're having out there. Huge. And so that's moving all over the system throughout. Just it gives you an idea that all of these areas are always in motion working. Next slide, please. NTSB recommendations, you know, only this could get into train control modules. It could get into additional, you know, guarded number 8s that we're working on as well. Next slide, please. This one right in here, for example, when we talked about construction only. That's at Chevrolet. That's where we had an adjacent construction project impacted our alignment. We have a bridge that has shifted its intention. In March of this coming year, we will literally be out there repairing the bridge and jacking that thing up. We have speed restrictions, and what we're trying to do is get out in front of this so we don't have catastrophic failures, and so we don't have to shut down the system. But that repair is going to require some major outages and stuff. And as we go forward, we will communicate these on a regular basis, provide pictures and stuff of what we're doing and why we're doing these things. Next slide, please. And just a smaller segment to work here, you know, with the NTSB, with the red line contract, for example, we're having to change out, you know, a lot of modules and everything else. So those are areas that will phase between different departments. Next slide, please. There you go. And then we have the red line contract that comes in where we're kind of giving you an idea of this coming year. This is where a lot of the heavy work is taking place. The red line contract is a multi-year contract, so the following year it'll have something else that'll be shown out there. But again, this is a driver for our capital, our expenditures, and again, we keep stressing safety, state of good repair, and the reliability, you know, for our customers out there. Next slide, please.
Excuse me, just a quick question on the previous slide. This is just this coming year's work?
This is this coming year's work. And one of the things that we did include in this presentation is in your appendix. And we talked about total shutdowns, and we put that in the front, as well as what we talked about, single tracking efforts. We are, for example, we have single tracking work right now that's, you know, being implied, or we have to work with the state of Virginia because they're finishing a highway, you know, project, you know, off the Beltway. That's impacting us out there. We've got the Dulles tie-in. So we'll be coming into this, you know, in greater detail. But what this is it's an outline plan saying this is what's going to be happening for the next year. Some of it is even longer. If you notice, some of the stuff talks about 2012. Whenever we communicated with the NTSB on our guarded number 8 switches program for the main line, the agency, we've got a lot of criticism for not staying with the program or demonstrating that they could do that. We've had a lot of meetings behind there. The board has supported us with the necessary capital. We've put together a good project, and we've been hitting every date that has been put out there. For example, Martin Luther King date, you know, where we're going to change it out at Foggy Bottom, that is one of those dates. Smithsonian and President's Day. Those are the things that are coming up here. It's not pleasant work, but the nice thing about us doing these guarded number 8s, and maybe this ties in with some of the benefits that's being discussed, we're talking about replacing existing infrastructure that's been here 30 years or 40 years. Whenever we replace these guarded number 8s and everything else, we shouldn't have to go back for another, you know, 20 years, you know, other than maybe light maintenance to do some grinding or whatever like that. But those are the type of things that once we do it, we can walk away from it and know that we can move into other areas.
And I'm presuming the vital signs report will give us monthly progress reports and all this.
Well, actually, that will vital signs, but it also ties in with our capital budget as well. So we're in our master schedule. So I think there's going to be a lot of different variables that we could look at this from a different perspective.
It would be nice to be able to put this kind of graphic on our website if we can. Certainly the overlay element of it adds a little more clarity if you could see certain overlays. Mr. Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly agree with my colleagues that we need to find other ways, better ways to communicate. Remind us what the total cost of this investment is going to be for FY 2011.
2011, we've got a capital budget close to $800 million. Again, this doesn't cover, you know, there's buses and the mixture of everything.
Just infrastructure. But
infrastructure?
Rail.
You're probably looking at well in excess of between the orange and blue, $300+ million.
Okay. I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, you know, I don't want to say being beat up, but certainly everybody, all the eyes are shining down on us in terms of what, you know, lack of governance, and lack of oversight, safety service, everything else. But yet we have a plan of action in place to address and meet those needs and those challenges. And whether it's at COG, whether it's at the Board of Trade, whether it's here, there, everywhere, the governors and the mayors, one, we can go out and should go out and the presentation you just made today, I think, is very helpful. But it's one thing for us as the board members to benefit from it because John Q. Public is not going to know about it. Maybe the press will write about it. Maybe they won't. But, you know, the stakeholders should know about this, or we have a forum and invite all of these interested stakeholders, parties to come and hear this message. Because it's, in fairness, we are being responsive, and but yet it's not being adequately and properly communicated. And that's just a suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Yule. Other questions, comments at this point? Please proceed, Mr. Dubacek.
Okay. Right in here again, you know, the benefits, and it's been duly noted, you know, we have to do a better job of communicating it, and really appreciate this forum for this, because we do have a lot of great things, and we just got to figure out a package, and this is really the first time we've had an opportunity to start talking with y'all at this level of detail this far in advance. And, you know, like I said, it's putting everything together. You know, improve service reliability. I just want to talk about that. Improve service, you know, on time. Our number one focus is a.m. and p.m. time. We're really looking at trying to capitalize our peak service periods to make sure that this railroad runs at its optimum when it's really, really called upon. Okay. Now, we do know that we have a lot of outages, but we're trying to minimize that so that way we do not impact the schedule. Better service flexibility. For example, one of the things that's taken place is with train control and us doing these turnouts and guarded number eights. We do have various interlockings and stuff that are in really bad shape that have speed restrictions or they can't be used. Part of this process is that we're able to rehabilitate these things and be able to place them back into service. So that way, if we have a sick customer, yes, it's a huge issue on us that we have to work through, but at least we have an opportunity to, instead of having to go 3 or 4 miles and start diverting rail cars, we might be able to take advantage of an interlocking within a mile or so. So that way, that speeds up efficiency. Sustained 50% eight-car trains. I brought these props in just to kind of give you an idea because the Metro Matter spent a bunch of good money in upgrading this system, okay? And don't get me wrong, it was well spent. But what you have here is you've got a 30 to 40-year-old piece of infrastructure wiring. If you can notice, it's loose. This was just sitting in a conduit, and look at how the insulation is worn out. You have water that gets into these things. This is a big contributor of fires and everything else. And, again, when the system was built, this was the best stuff that was available, you know, 30 and 40 years ago, okay? Now, as we go through this massive infrastructure program, we've got great substations. Well, but when we connect the substations, we got some problems. So, you know, this is rated for 1,000. Same, look at the same size. This is rated at 2,000. And then the 2,000 volts. The other thing is we've got shielding in being installed to reduce the electromagnetic interference that's taking place that's impacting us as well. We replace 20 to 25,000 feet of cable a month, which equates to about 4 to 5 miles. Now, we are now going to have to expand in train control and all these other areas, but this infrastructure is key to keep this railroad, you know, moving forward. And just to kind of give you an idea of whenever they did a 50% substation upgrade, you might have had a substation that was, say, for instance, rated at 2 or 3 megawatt. Now you have the same area that's sitting at 7. I mean, you've more than doubled it, if not even more. So this is very, very critical for us to stay on top of as well. And like I said, you can just see it's this is just sitting here, and whenever it goes, and it is non-repairable, you know. And so very remarkable. And actually, if you can see this piece has been cut out, and there's still moisture that's found its way in there. And we actually have some samples that you can poke it with a knife, and it'll just spew right out. So this also, like I said, this is a big help. So I just wanted to kind of have kind of like a clarifier. The 50% eight-car train substations and everything, a great project and good equipment, but we've got to continue to work on the infrastructure so that way we can take advantage of that. Track system infrastructure, again, just with the switches and stuff, smoother ride quality, again, flash butt welding, replacement of railroad ties stuff, not fancy stuff, just basic state of good repair items. More audible public address system, that's one of the things that we just, you know, it's a constant fight on that right there. And as we're working with these line segment contracts and we're going through replacing it, it's nice because I don't have two stations with this, one station with that, three stations with this. We are able to go in there and start standardizing these systems across the board and do things in bulk and take advantage of this cost whenever we're doing these things in advance. And because the vendors will lock in our prices in 2010 or 2011, we might not do it until 2012 or so, but at least we're not paying all this other markup and everything else, and it's really helping us out as well. And again, just to tie in, you know, it's an aggressive schedule that enables us to expend capital funds and assure, you know, a safer system. And as was discussed earlier, this is what is really, really driving this across the board. There was some questions about level of detail. I brought some examples. You know, this is just a sample. This is a weekly discussion sheet right in here. That is, this is with is accessible by all of our staff. This goes out 3 months. This is a greater detail than what you just saw here. This has people's names, contacts, everything else, all the overlay. This report is generated, recreated every week. And basically what happens, 1 week falls off and another week populates out. This is just 3 months. We've also requested, you know, about the larger view. If you want to go out several years, we have stuff like this that is being generated, you know, as well. And again, it ties back into, we're talking about a capital state of good repair, the master schedule. We're developing these powerful tools at this bottom, eliminating a lot of silos and trying to force everything up so that way we're as consistent as possible, because there is a lot of independency. And again, it's not noted in this report, but if we take a station down, and like with the line segment, we want to piggyback as much work as possible. So we just don't want to be out there replacing a piece of rail. We want to be out there painting something, replacing tile, you know, doing different wiring, changing out the lights and everything else, and that has a big benefit, and that's why this presentation and our planning and stuff is so very important. Next slide, please.
Mr. Chairman, just before we leave that, the slide about benefits, I think, gets to the point that was being raised earlier. We were saying to people, you know, in effect, no pain, no gain. Mm-hmm. We have not defined the gain. I think this kind of thing would be very helpful, especially if we can translate it into what will that mean to the rider.
Yeah.
Why will this place be a better place because we get this done? I think we'll hopefully get across some of the issues we were talking about.
If I could also add, I'd like to give credit to our communications department, Barbara and stuff. It's really nice that she has her staff now sitting in on these level of meetings. So whenever we're talking 4 weeks and 8 weeks out and everything else, they're the folks that really deserve their credit to get the proper message. You know, they stay very diligent after us to make sure we provide the right information and to make sure it's accurate as possible. So there's
But it's both the information about how you'll immediately be affected, but also the information about why this is an investment for their future.
Yes.
Mr. Acosta has a question.
Yes, actually, I'd like to suggest there's a lot of interest here in terms of a customer communications program, but also to explain the benefits of our overall capital program and what it means for a customer. It may make sense for us to, or maybe I'll ask the general manager to maybe come back next month or the month after with a proposal, and maybe they could think through some of the put together some ideas and also a strategy in terms of how to get this message out. Like, we're not going to do it here today, obviously, but we'll let them be good to have it done.
Other questions before we proceed? Proceed.
On the presentation, press releases, website, figuring out what the best thing is for us to get out and reach and touch the customer. Again, this planning and looking at it outward. And then not only is it just a matter of executing the event, but we also kind of have debriefings and stuff post, like a Martin Luther King, to kind of see what was successful, what wasn't. Where did things get off time? Where did we get a lot of customer complaints because there was, you know, not good communications on their ride and everything else? So those things are followed, and we just keep trying to refine it every time that we have one of these events. Next slide, please. Okay, this is one of the things that I'd also like to commit to come back to the board, summer of 2011, to come back with further clarifications on some of the items that we talked about. We're already talking about 2012 internally, okay, physical year, as well as calendar year 2012, 2013. But I'd like to kind of come back. One of the big things that could be a huge disruptor, but it's very critical, is in December, the board supported us with the train control modules to replace all of this so we could restore the railroad back to a form of ATO operation. So it's not only just the elimination of the old modules, but it's also the restoration of the rail system to ATO, which we know provides us better on-time performance because the system is much more aggressive. Operators tend to be a little bit more conservative, a little bit more nervous and stuff. So with that, that is going to be a big driver. We awarded that in December. It's going to take several months for us to come back to formulate a schedule. I can kind of preface it right now. Is kind of what we're doing right now. We will be recommending or asking if we can close down three or four stations over a certain weekend, create a large bus bridge. There's time savings, cost savings, and the biggest thing is to get it back to ATO. The other component why we want to do this on the red line, not only because it's the largest and a very aggressive line, but also technically there's a lot of benefits. We don't have merge points. We're going to have some very interesting challenges and stuff on this. But as soon as we're able to get those refined, then our next deployment would be at the orange-blue and then at the yellow-green to take care of that. The other component is further evaluation of state of good repair and capital efforts. Again, this information material is not just at the ground level. PV is also part of these meetings as well as the CFO and everything else. And the more that we can refine this, the better benefit that we're going to have. We're also finding out, working with our contracts department to vet these things to take advantage of economy of scale and what's taking place. And I think the other thing is just assess, you know, the future needs of, you know, increasing maintenance findings and standards. We're going to find other stuff that we just haven't been able to cover at this point in time. The NTSB recommendations where we're talking about basically homing cables, doing additional checks and everything else, we're going to find some stuff that at this point in time that we just haven't been able to address. And so we want to make sure that we're able to come back and kind of give you a technical perspective of why we're doing these things and what's taking place, and then let the financial portion of it flow into that as well to see what's going to happen from a budgetary standpoint so there's a better understanding of why the money might be moved in certain ways and why we're questioning those type of things.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Dowd.
Yeah, one other factor I think we always need to keep in mind, and I know you are doing this, but as we schedule this work and perform it in the way we are performing it, it actually is an opportunity to do it safer.
Absolutely.
Overall project where everyone knows what everyone else is doing. We've had a wonderful safety record on these major outages for the last year, and I just hope we'll continue to do that.
I would say one of the benchmarks of this level of detail is that very reason. We need to know where everybody is at on this railroad. Not only do we need to know where you're at, we need to know why you're out there, because it ties into performance. And if you're out there too often, and even with some of the technology that we're looking at or being proposed on solutions, we are looking at equipment, we are looking at approaches to help reduce the number of times that our staff have to walk out into that right of way, because safety, and it also impacts the customers. And those are the different steps as we're moving forward to make sure that we can reduce our risk as much as possible.
I want to thank you for an excellent report, Mr. Kubicek. We really appreciate that. But I have one follow-on question related to page 9 of 79 on the 2011 first quarter progress report. And clearly you've identified a very aggressive and a very thorough but a large program of work. Yet in the first quarter, we're at 49% execution. Now, obviously, we recognize that certain projects, it doesn't go like a graph, an equal amount each month. Sometimes you have big slugs of money being obligated. But clearly, I just want to point that out to you, that we're kind of behind the ball right now a little bit dollar-wise expenditure. We may be on schedule project-wise, but the dollar-wise execution is a little sluggish. Mr. Sarles, you had a comment to that?
As you know, going into this fiscal year, we said we'd have a challenge, and while we brought the additional resources in and really try to manage this as a capital program is to address that issue. I believe, look over my colleagues here, that in the second quarter, you'll see us up at 75%, right? Expended. Expended as a result of the 7,000 series payment. Just for, not against the year, just against where we're supposed to be for the first half of the year.
So that's exactly right. Our goal will be at 75% of our forecasted goal.
For the six months. However, you're absolutely right. Next 6 months, we got to turn up the volume even more, and that's what we're attempting to do through the variance analysis and the risk analysis so that we can stay up at that rate and increase the rate. But it's a challenge that we're going to deal with.
Mr. McKay had a question.
Yeah, a question as we approach this major work, needed work in our system. How are we doing on training, the new training program of our employees who are out there in our right-of-way doing work? Are we making major progress in that area? Do we still have challenges that need to be addressed? Where does that stand?
Right now, that's we've got well over 1,000 people trained. We have a March 31st deadline for us to have the roadway worker protection, you know, in place. We've got about 2,500 to 3,000 more people to go. One of the things that I've committed to the general manager and also to that March 31st date is if I have to halt some of our other maintenance activities from day-to-day stuff to ensure that we have the staff there, that's what we're going to do. There is an associated risk. But the other byproduct of it is if I keep seeing the delay, if you're not using it, you lose it. And, you know, I can't have a setup where we have employees that were trained 8 months ago and all of a sudden we go live. So, well, we will, March 31st is the date for the new roadway worker protection approach.
So just as a follow-up, that by that date, all of the employees will have been through the program, or by that date, only employees who have been through the program will be out there?
We're targeting a number of over 3,000 employees to have addressed, so that way we will have the substantial folks that will be managing the work zones and the work crews on a 24/7 mentality. Then the other component that we have to look at is that this roadway worker protection program really has no end date, because as we get new employees and everything else, they'll go through a different qualification, you know, process. So, but we will make sure we have the appropriate in it. And I would also say it's not only just the just our folks, it's safety, you know, even at my level, to go through this to get into that right of way. It is it's a very, very serious program.
Ms. Porter?
I just wanted to agree with folks that are saying that we need to be thinking strategically about how we reach out to the public, to customers and stakeholders. But I also wanted to make another point. I really like this list of benefits, and I think that communicates well what the renovations are trying to do. But I think we also need to be careful about managing expectations. We don't want to tell people service levels will be improved unless we know that they're going to see a visible difference in service levels. We don't want to go out there telling people that everything's going to look so much better and then they don't see it. So we need to be careful about what we promise, that it's something that we know we can deliver on and that we know that customers can see.
Other comments, questions? Thank you for your report. Oh, you had to say something?
Yeah.
Or finish?
I just have one last item.
Right.
It's not noted here, but it'll be discussed, and it's part of the capital project program that we have now. FCC recommendations for narrow banding. One of the things that we're looking at is about our radio communications for the transit police, bus, and rail. That is a project that we're very sensitive to, that we're doing a lot of studies, because in 2013 time frame, they're going to the FCC, we're going to have to look at narrowing our capabilities to broadcast on a radio to make room for more, basically more cell phones. We're going to have to look at an investment for additional towers, so there's going to be an above-ground effort that's already taking place, as well as below-ground. And I'd also like to note that we've already started our communications with the Dulles project as well to make sure that we have the proper coverage and everything else. So that one, for me, wasn't noted originally, but it's something like right now we're just in the study phase and trying to do basic maintenance, but it will definitely be a huge driver and a huge visibility item with us going forward the next 6 months, the next 2 years, and forward.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? That concludes this item. The last item on our agenda is a subsequent agenda, which I'm tentatively scheduled for February 10th, where we'll look at, obviously, an update of the vital signs scorecard as an information item, the escalator performance report, and one action item is currently identified, the approval of the Accessibility Advisory Committee governance item.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Knowing the process here, an issue that is of concern in my community is the potential yellow line, blue line split that Mr. McKay noted before, and I had been told that perhaps it's supposed to be implemented in July. we haven't seen any information. I think it might be good to start providing something if we're still on that timeline to implement.
Mr. Charles,
it'll be a different timeline than that, and we will be coming back to the board with the entire presentation.
Any time frame on the presentation?
March.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hines. Any other comments? Okay, that being said, this meeting is adjourned.